Sports Leader.
K fans, 6 o'clock, he's Kyle Gunther, I'm Ben Anderson. Come catch us tomorrow from 10 to noon at K1 Speed. We're going to be hanging out there. Now, we've already got all of our qualifiers entered to win the NASCAR Driveway coming up March 10th through the 12th. But if you want to come down and race, it'd be fun to come on down and meet you guys. We're going to be there from 10 to noon out here in Sandy, 725 East, 106 South. It's K1 Speed.
Did you hear our buddies at K-Bear talking all that trash about us, our buddies Mick and Alan over at the Freak Show? I heard them talking with Jimbo and Mitch on the air, and I also heard it off the air in the hallways. They thought that our studio door was closed. It was open. I could hear it. Mick and Alan both think that you and I are slowpokes on the road.
And they're right. We have young kids. We like to drive slowly.
They have Harleys. I mean, they're like motorcycle guys.
I've seen Alan. Alan's the blonde guy at every Jazz game, doing kind of the in-between timeout stuff. Alan Handy, he's the man. We love Alan.
You've heard Mick for 20 years here in the market.
But I mean, you don't grow out blonde hair like that unless you're planning on flying 100 miles an hour on the go-karts.
You know that song, I Can't Drive 55?
Right.
It was written by Alan Handy.
Written by Alan, about Alan.
Yeah, and then obviously Sammy Hagar went out there and just lifted the song.
Well, he stole everything from Alan. He looks like Alan. He lifts his lyrics.
That's why they call him Stealing Sammy Hagar, man, stealing lyrics from those guys. So we do have a carton of cigarettes on the line. We have a bet with those guys at K-Bear. Very excited for that and could make things pretty interesting for the all-company meeting on Monday. Mick's been known to give a little bit of a scowl our direction. It could happen on Monday if we beat him.
We're hanging out at the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center today, open until 7 o'clock. So if you're getting off work and want to stop by, plenty of time to still come on down and check it out. But they're also open from 9 to 5 tomorrow, so come on down, bring the family. They've got tons of great stuff. Every attendee gets a free round of golf. They've got tickets available at the door. But you get to come on down. You can try out new equipment. They've got drawings for different golf trips, clubs, and apparel. Free lessons for the kids and clubs to use. If you don't have specific custom kid clubs, you can come on down and use them here at the indoor driving range. They've also got a putt-putt golf here in the back. It's really an awesome time. Different displays going on, different demonstrations. So it's going to be worth your time to come on down and check out the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center.
Let me know at some point here this hour if you feel like I can tell my inappropriate joke about a guy who decided to murder his wife because of his love of golf. Let me know if you feel like that's appropriate at any given time. I can tell that one.
Well, we're waiting.
All right, so there's this guy, and unfortunately he's got this horrible idea. He wants to murder his wife. It's a shameful idea.
That is a horrible idea.
It's a horrible idea, Ben. It's not something you should ever joke about. Well, so the guy says, I got an ingenious plan here. I'm going to go out there on the golf course, and I'm going to make it look like an accident. So he got up there after, about 3 or 4 holes. He got away from the clubhouse. He and his wife out there in the middle of this course, in the middle of the day. He said, here's the time to do it. He said, hon, can you go out there real quick? I think I see something blocking my view on the tee box. And he had her stand there in front of her, and unfortunately he just unloaded one right into her. It is this horrible scene where the cops come. The guy's trying to act. He's trying to act all upset. You know, I mean, this is a guy that's trying to commit this horrible thing, but he loves golf. You know, and so the police walk up and they say, my goodness, you know, I think we found the cause of death here. There's a golf ball lodged into this poor woman's body cavity. And they said, but what about here? Well, there's a second wound. There's also another ball that's lodged into the other side of her body. And the husband said, well, yeah,
here it comes.
That one was my mulligan. But the other one, and that was a real accident. The first one was just it was a breakfast ball.
What a punchline. I mean, unreal, the delivery.
Okay, Ben, are you not going to accept any responsibility? You started cracking up in the middle of that. I couldn't think of a polite way to deliver that line.
It's not a polite way to tell that joke.
You don't think
joke.
It was a good one?
Well,
it's a golf
the
joke.
Ending coming. Yeah, it's a golf joke, and every golfer knows that joke.
Are you saying you've heard that joke before, Ben?
I heard you tell that joke on our show.
Why don't you help a brother out then if I'm repeating jokes? That's a great golf joke.
Because I don't assume that everyone who listens to our show who's in the car on the way home.
All right, let me make it up to you, Ben.
Listens to you talk 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, the way I do.
You know, I'm going to apologize for that joke. That was insensitive and it wasn't funny enough. Let me tell you a funny joke. How come they named golf golf?
Why?
Because the F word was already taken, Ben. See, it's a frustrating game, that golf.
We're going to talk to David Nixon, former BYU linebacker, coming up here in just a couple of minutes as we get ready for BYU spring football to kick off on Monday.
No, I said it was my mulligan. It was the first.
I like where this defense starts, and I think when you have a good defense, which is going to be the case for BYU under Kalani Sitake pretty much every year that he's there now, you'll have exceptions where positions are down. It happens at every school. Utah consistently puts players in the NFL. Last year, they didn't have a good linebacking core, and it cost them some games, but they found a way to get around it. That will happen at BYU, but they're going to start relying on their defense more and more every season to go out and win them games and keep them in games. And you already saw it last year. BYU didn't have a blowout loss at any point last season like they had to Michigan a couple of years ago, and I think a lot of that is because their defense is just not allowing huge, fast scores that their offense can't keep up with.
And that was Broncos' MO for 10-plus years. It was the bend-but-don't-break defense, and what that means is they're going to give you 10 yards to throw some underneath routes. They might give up some shorter throws to avoid the deep throw, to avoid the 75-yard bomb, the backbreaker of a play. If you give up a 5-yard comeback route as a defense, you can recover from that. I mean, it's not ideal. But, you know, if an offense does 6 or 7 of those type plays, you know, more often than not in college, the offense is going to make a mistake, a turnover, a holding call. There's going to be something that the offense does as far as poor execution that sets them back. And that was Broncos' goal with the secondary. That wasn't always the fastest at BYU. Kalani's going to have the same talent pool to work with. Coach Tuiaki can't just dramatically change things overnight. But I think you're going to see, as BYU improves their speed in the secondary, you're going to see them play more of traditional coverages. The 10-yard cushion is really frustrating to watch. As a BYU fan, you've seen it for many years. You know what cushion I'm talking about. The BYU corners, they've got to play off right, so they don't give up these deep balls and just all of a sudden cost their team huge swings in momentum.
Now, that's where a guy like Kainakua was so valuable last year, when you were giving that cushion and you thought, oh, man, we've got an open receiver. We've got a good one-on-one matchup. That's where Kainakua, with his ball skills, would come in as a safety and get his takeaways. Would he have 6 interceptions or something ridiculous last year? It was good the season before that as well. That's where you're going to need a guy like Chaz Aiyu to have some of that closing speed to come on in and be able to make a play on the ball to allow those cornerbacks to continue to look good. Because make no mistake, there's good corners in it. And right now, Dion Lake and Troy Warner at BYU are good corners. But having a safety valve in Kainakua coming over to provide support is enormous, and he could kind of play in the center of the field and come on out and help you either way.
Was Bronco willing to draw portraits of recruits because he was at BYU, or is Bronco...
Did he take that to the South, are you asking?
I'm wondering if he's drawing pictures for recruits now that he's at Virginia.
Yeah,
because
okay recruiting class this year, not great though.
I will always think of Dion Lake as the first player at least we found out about that Bronco painted... Like that scene from the movie Titanic.
Did you hear about the guy gambling on golf? The one about the guy who gambles on golf?
Oh no, I haven't been.
Okay, so there's this guy sitting in Vegas at the bar, and he's just looking horrible.
Huh.
And his buddy comes up and says, "Hey, pal, what's going wrong?" He goes, "Man, I was betting on basketball earlier today. I went 0-7. I was betting on football. I went 0-8. I was betting on baseball games. I went 0-9. He said, I'm really down. And his buddy says, "Well, there's a golf tournament tonight. Why don't you put some money on the golf tournament?" And the guy says, "I don't know anything about golf." Because you get it? Because he doesn't know anything about any sports. See, he bet poorly on all the other sports, too. You get the joke there?
So help me goodness, Ben. You know, I try to be supportive sometimes.
You're going to steal that joke tonight. You're going to tell your buddy
Ben,
Brett that joke tonight.
I got to tell you, Ben, you know, normally I'm really on board with you when you try this whole joke thing. I like that you're coming out of your shell. But how dare you attack a joke that I made I had 2 real quality jokes, and you rebounded with that smorgasbord of vanilla blend. There was no punchline there, Ben. My goodness. Now, I'm not going to attack you unless you had attacked me first. I think we both had to try to turn back the time on our golf jokes. You know, let's try to, going forward, let's try to make a real improvement on our golf jokes here. I mean, it's spring coming up.
Let's welcome in our next guest, switch it up, talks of BYU football. You can find him on Twitter at D_Nixon, former BYU and NFL linebacker. It is David Nixon. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, David.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, man, we were just talking about this huge paintball fight that the BYU football team got in. They did some team-building exercises. Did you guys ever get to play paintball when you were playing at BYU?
You know, I don't think we ever did paintball, but we had some team-building stuff. We got out and about, did some fun stuff. We rafted the river, did some stuff here and there, but paintball's taken to a whole other level. I'm a little jealous.
David, does that help? I mean, does that really bring the team closer together to get you ready for what is the grind of spring football?
Listen, I think any time you can get the entire team out there together to do any event, whatever it is, I think it's positive. I mean, you got the bus ride out there, you got the actual activity itself, and then bus ride back, guys are joking around. I mean, anything to build that team camaraderie, I think, is positive. So, you know, the college athlete is tough because you are so busy. Life is hectic. I mean, you've got school that you're worried about. A lot of these guys have wives and families that that's pulling, you know, their time away from things. So anytime you can get away from those distractions and, you know, be together as a team, I think it's positive, and especially when you're kind of trying to head into an important time for this football team, which is spring ball. I mean, this is with Kalani's now got a full year ahead of them. You know, this is a crucial time for these players to really be keyed in and honed in and make sure the whole team's on the same page.
David, what's the difference, look, before we get into some of the nitty-gritty stuff, of being, you know, a first-year player and this is your first appearance at BYU, what's that feel like, that first day, versus when you were a senior, when you're an upperclassman and you know what to expect?
It's just night and day. I mean, because these first-year kids, and even kids that were around just last year, these underclassmen, I would say, I mean, you're still fighting for your position. That's really what spring ball is all about. For the veteran guys, the upperclassmen, I mean, they've already proven themselves. Spring ball is kind of, I mean, half of them sit out of spring ball. It's not really that necessary. They're still trying to get healed up from the prior season. But for those younger guys, I mean, this is for their time to shine and hopefully leave a good taste in the coach's mouth moving forward into the summer and then heading into fall ball. So, if I'm a young guy, I mean, this is my time and they'll have plenty of opportunities. That's what spring ball is all about. The veteran guys usually sit it out and the younger guys gotta come in and improve themselves. So, this is one of those times where you can't put on cruise control. You've got to be on edge and ready to go.
Tanner Mangum didn't have a full off season coming off his mission, and then last year, obviously, he was sitting behind Taysom Hill. What can a full off season of workouts do for a guy in Tanner Mangum and his development?
I think it's huge. I mean, Tanner got a lot of mental reps in last year, sitting behind Taysom. He was in all those meetings. He understood the offense. He was right there with Ty. But this is the year when he really gets to take spring ball. He's the guy. He's the leader. He's the captain, and really lead this offense along. And so I think spring ball is big for him. You know, we talk about the veteran guys usually sit this stuff out, but for a guy like Tanner Mangum, you know, this is going to be probably his most crucial spring ball that he's ever had because he's in this offense that he'll have for the next few years. And, you know, once again, this is where he gets those main reps and as the number one quarterback. And, you know, last year he got those reps in as well, spring ball, but yeah, keep in mind, there's still in the back of everyone's mind that Taysom will be coming back and maybe join the team. And so, you know, this is now his team, and he's at the helm. And so there's no doubt this is a huge, huge spring ball for him.
David Nixon's our guest, 1320K fan. David, when you look at the offensive side of the ball, we were talking about Tanner. He's an answer. I mean, that's a nice plus going into spring football. But it seems like there's quite a few question marks at the skill positions outside of him. Where are you most focusing in on spring football for BYU to find some answers?
Yeah, I think it all goes back to that running back position. You know, with Jamal Williams vacating that spot, who's going to step up? And that's the one spot that just glares out to me. You know, you look at last year when Jamal was hurt, you had guys like KJ Hall and Algie Brown. You had guys that come in and fill in. But the question is, who's going to be the feature back? And, you know, with a pro style offense, it's more crucial than ever. You have to have a feature back, that can run the ball, that can set up the pass, right? I mean, that's what the pro-style offense is all focused around. So, you know, BYU's got some athletes in those positions. It's just who's going to emerge and be the leader. And that's what I'm most interested about, who can fill the void of Jamal. Because Jamal wasn't just a leader on the field, but he was that vocal leader in the locker room and off the field for those guys. And so who's going to fill that void, that hype void, you know, the guy that gets the rest of the team up and going like Jamal did. And that'll be the most interesting thing that plays out for me. And that's not going to be solved here in spring ball. I mean, that's something that I think even more importantly come summertime will be something that a player will emerge as the guy that's sitting around there helping coordinate the off-season workouts, helping coordinate 7-on-7. And so there will be a guy that will emerge, and I'm interested to see exactly who it is. And it could even be an underclassman. You know, we know Kalani he'll play anybody. He plays the best athlete out there, and it could be an underclassman that comes in and proves himself and gains respect of his teammates. And next thing you know, you've got one of those guys stepping in and filling that void. So very interested to see what happens there at the running back position.
Most teams now in college football are running a spread offense. They're going up-tempo style. How can BYU use their pro-style offense more so to their advantage?
You know, you look at the recruiting class that Kalani went out and got, and he focused very heavily on defensive and offensive linemen. And that's what, you know, with the pro-style offense, that's what you have to focus in on. You've got to have a sure foundation. And he went out and got big, strong, athletic guys that can move. You know, in the past, BYU's gone with these bigger offensive linemen. And to go fast, go hard with Coach and I, they went for some faster guys that could get out and block downfield. But Kalani's going for these big, tall athletes on the offensive defense side of the ball. And so with that being said, it all starts up front, this offensive line. It'll be interesting to see how that all comes together. And then the pro-style offense, I mean, this is Ty's offense. This is his mastermind. And, you know, I think there was a learning curve this year for Ty and for that offense of trying to figure things out, trying to figure out where their strengths were, where their weaknesses were. And I think for anybody, it's going to be nice to have one year underneath his belt would be Ty Detmer. And now knowing his personnel and continue to be able to recruit the guys that he wants in the system. And so I think that's where the spring ball and this pro style offense comes into play. It is definitely different than the spread. You know, I talked to Taysom a lot this past year, and it took him a little while to get used to the pro style. And we saw as the season kind of transitioned on, they kind of reverted back to the shotgun spread offense a little more, because those were the strengths of this offense. But I think, Ty continues to implement that offense, obviously here in spring ball in the summer and going to fall ball, to where you'll see his offense continue to transition a little bit to more of what he wants it to look like, long term.
There's a 6'5", 340-pound stud muffin offensive lineman down in St. George who's going to be the state of Utah's top recruit next year. Do you like that BYU's going down to St. George to do some spring ball? I mean, I'm sure it's not a coincidence that Penei Sewell's down there. I mean, do you like this strategy of BYU going right to some of these prospects?
You know, we see that with Michigan going out and do their spring ball and getting trips in. You know, it's a new concept. I'm not sure how I feel about it. You know, personally, like I said, there's so much going on here, you know, at your respective university with schooling and with family, whatever it may be, you know, for to go off and do a satellite type camp for a little bit. That's a new concept. I'm not sure how I feel about it. It'll be interesting to see how the players react to it. If it's something they like, it might be good to, you know, you look back at the old day in fall ball, teams would, you know, and even when I played in the NFL, we'd go off to Napa when I was with the Raiders and when I was with the Panthers. We went down to Spartanburg, and it is kind of nice because you do get away from the distractions and you have to rely on being around one another. And so, you know, maybe it could be for the good. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But, you know, anytime you can be around recruits and give them some exposure, let them come to practice a couple times a week and be around the players and let those players kind of befriend those potential recruits. I mean, that's only positive exposure for the teams. And so, yeah, I mean, hey, listen, St. George is great weather as well, so you can't complain about that.
Find him on Twitter at D_Nixon, former BYU and NFL linebacker. Great stuff, David. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Okay, guys. Yep, take care.
David giving us a good breakdown on spring football. Looking at BYU, obviously, it's an important spring, as always, but I think the fact that they're going to need to find some leaders on both sides of the ball this year, where you had Jamal and Taysom last year. Taysom had so much experience and had such a great resume, and Jamal Williams had so much charisma coming back and a great resume of his own, that it was easy to fall in line behind those guys. I think now, let's see, you're going to have to find some new bodies on the offensive and defensive side of the ball.
How about Tooney Kanuch? 325 pounds, a twisted steel. I think he could be a potential team captain candidate. Tijon Karoma. Obviously, Tanner Mangum can be a great leader. And then, you know, maybe another young player will step up. Maybe Austin Hoyt learned a lot from a year ago. Defensively, you've got a bunch of guys on that D-line that were in the rotation, and so they can potentially speak up. But understand, you can't, if you're not helping the team, if you're not contributing to wins, you don't have an opinion. You don't get to say, let's go, guys. You're not a rah-rah person there. There's cheerleaders to do that. So if you are not a starter, your mouth is to be closed at all times. So you got to earn that right to be vocal.
Go check out Trilogy Medical Center today. Feel younger, look younger when you go check them out. Over 40% of their clients at the Trilogy Medical Center are men. So you're not going to walk in there like a fish out of water. they're going to know exactly how to help you look younger and feel better, whether it's the cool sculpting, whether it's Botox like Gunther has had, or whether you want to regrow your hair with the PRP treatment. They can take care of you at the Trilogy Medical Center. Go talk to Ron and the ladies, 7001 South, 900 East, or you can go check them out online, trilogymedicalcenter.com. We're live at the Southtown Expo Center, hanging out at the Wasatch Golf Expo. We're going to be here for another 40 minutes. If you can't make it down tonight, though, come on by tomorrow. They're open 9 to 5. Every attendee gets a free round of golf, free lessons and clubs for the kids as well. Enter to win a bunch of drawings, clubs, apparel, but they've got great demonstrations, great products down here, and they still have tickets available at the door. When you come on by and see us, it's the Wasatch Golf Expo at the Southtown Expo Center.
See if you can rip a hole in the net over here in the driving range. It's only about 20 or 30 yards ahead of you, but obviously you're just going for pure power here. Chicks dig the long ball.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to Ben Golliver from Sports Illustrated, getting a breakdown on the second half of the NBA season for the Utah Jazz and who the real contenders are. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAM.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
I've been missing out on something for a while.
K-Fan, we're live at the Wasatch Golf Expo. Hanging out at the Southtown Expo Center. Stop on by and see us today. We're going to be here until 7 o'clock, another 30 minutes. If you can't make it down today, stop by and see us tomorrow, 9 to 5, here at the Southtown Expo Center for the Wasatch Golf Expo.
Are you willing to admit that at least part of the reason why you wanted to have Ben Golliver on is you and him share the same first name?
We have the same first name, and that's why we should do a show of all Bens. In fact, put my name first on the show.
Well, it's been a long time since that's happened.
Let's welcome in our next guest.
Dynamite,
Let's welcome in our next guest.
Far out, brother.
Talking about the second half of the NBA season. You can find him on Twitter, at Ben Golliver. Read him at Sports Illustrated. It is our friend Ben Golliver. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Ben.
Us.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're doing good, getting ready for the second half of the NBA season now. The Jazz don't make a move at the trade deadline. Do you think that was a mistake, or do you think this is a roster that still hasn't been healthy enough and there's room to grow within the team?
Well, I think they're kind of in a pack of teams in the Western Conference, you know, second tier that all just kind of decided to sit tight, right? I mean, the Clippers, the Spurs, the Jazz, maybe even you throw the Grizzlies in there too. I don't know if this is sort of, you know, just contentment with their current roster and their current direction, or if it's a little bit of, you know, maybe justified Warriors fear in terms of, you know, not wanting to part with a lot of assets to try to make a big splashy move, knowing that the Warriors are kind of clicking on all cylinders and kind of running out ahead of everybody in the Western Conference. But, you know, from Utah's standpoint, I was okay with it. I mean, I looked
Gold
at this
State's
trade deadline. I'm okay with it because their action is going to be this summer. You know, they got big decisions on Hayward and Hill, and to get there, they want to keep those guys together and take a nice playoff push and try to get, you know, maybe a playoff series victory even under their belt. So to me, that was sort of the priority and why, you know, you saw a lack of movement by the Jazz at the deadline. Is their time will come. You know, that time is going to come in July.
Is there a matchup that you feel is favorable for the Jazz right now, whether they were to go up or down a few spots? I mean, who do you think is most susceptible to being beaten by the Jazz in the playoffs?
Well, it's tricky because, like, they've had a real struggle with the Clippers, right? But I think when you're looking at some of these teams, that's the team that's vulnerable because they've had pieces sort of in and out of the lineup. I mean, the one stylistic matchup that I'd love to see is Rockets versus Jazz, just from a kind of a basketball nerd standpoint, because both teams would present such interesting challenges for the other. And I also think, you know, from Utah's perspective, like, Houston looks really, you know, tough and almost untouchable during the regular season at times with their offense. But, you know, will that offense translate to a postseason environment? Are they still going to be able to, you know, get their offensive efficiency at a high rating? Is Harden still going to play at sort of this MVP caliber level? I mean, he's had some real struggles throughout his career during the postseason. Not to mention some of these other guys who aren't, you know, real defensive-minded players, whether it's their new pickup, Lou Williams, who you can pick on, you know, defensively, or guys like Eric Gordon and and Ryan Anderson as well. So to me, I think if there's one team that might be susceptible to being upset, it would be a team like Houston. So that would require Utah probably to drop back a little bit in the standings. You kind of have to like where they are. I mean, when I look at these middle of the pack West teams, whether it's the Clippers and the Jazz or the Grizzlies, or if you want to throw the Thunder in there too, Utah's had the steadiest run basically of all of them, even though they've been dealing with injuries probably more than any of those teams when you look at the sheer number of guys who have missed time. So that should give you a certain level of self-confidence heading into the postseason.
Sacramento fans smiling today after seeing a big win over the Denver Nuggets last night and then seeing Boogie Cousins almost have a 5-by-5, incredible numbers, and his team lost by 30 points.
Yeah, well, smile when you can if you're a Kings fan, because that trade, I think, is going to set them back a number of years. I understand, you know, why they want to move on from Cousins, but look, that was your one talented piece. I mean, they've had a number of draft misses in recent years. They really struggled to get any sort of talented player to even come there to work out for the draft, let alone sign there as a free agent. And so now they're in a situation where the return package was very, very poor. I mean, building a package around Buddy Hield is almost comical. And they're going to be in a situation where, you know, once this honeymoon of no Cousins wears off there in Sacramento, they're going to have to really face reality. It's going to be some tough sledding here down the stretch. And not to mention, they should be playing to try to keep their first-round picks. So they should be trying to lose, not trying to win here at this point of the season. So, I really feel bad for Kings fans. I mean, can you imagine being a Kings fan on Sunday night, tuning in to the All-Star game, expecting to see Cousins have his big showcase moment? Instead, he doesn't play, and then a couple hours later, he's traded. And then you see what the return package is, and it's, you know, not really going to blow your doors off of, you know, after years of trade rumors. Not to mention, you know, Vlade Divac has this press conference, and he's just kind of incomprehensible. I mean, you have no idea what he's talking about in terms of what his plan is and all these other offers he supposedly had. I mean, that's just tough for a fan base to go through. So, like I said, enjoy that win, you know, that Thursday night win over Denver, because they could be hard coming here the next few months.
What's the future like for Brandon Ingram, in your opinion, for the Lakers? Can he become some futuristic version of Kevin Durant? And how long before the Lakers are back contending for a championship?
Well, look, Brandon Ingram's got a really high ceiling. I mean, he's going to be a nice player. I think Durant, that's a little unfair to him, but he could be an all-star. I mean, there's no question. But I think the real key for the Lakers was getting rid of Jim Buss. You know, I thought the biggest addition of talent move at the deadline was for the Pelicans to get Cousins, but I thought the biggest addition by subtraction was the Lakers ditching Jim Buss. I mean, this guy just brought nothing to the table in terms of being a front office executive and what you need in that role. Didn't have the connections, didn't have the respect factor, didn't have the playing pedigree, did not have an eye for talent, not known as a draft guy, not really into analytics. I mean, he was just complete kind of wasted air. And so to move him out, I understand people are probably going to be skeptical of Magic Johnson, but look, on day one, he has a hand-picked, you know, pretty shrewdly selected GM in place in Rob Pelinka, a very well-respected and well-connected agent who's been linked to, you know, big-time star players for years, including Kobe Bryant and James Harden. And then you look at their first move, it's a smart trade of Lou Williams, you know, try to get a draft pick and then also, you know, set yourself up for a tank so that they can keep their own pick. And to me, this is kind of shaping up as a master plan where they're really looking to target a guy like Lonzo Ball. And the only way they're going to be in position to get him is if they maximize their odds in the lottery and if they come away with like a top two pick. And they really need to, you know, go into a developmental tank here and try to play some of these younger guys, let them struggle on the court and just rack up the losses so they can be in a position to add another difference maker. Because to me, you know, we mentioned Ingram as having a high ceiling. You know, I'm still pretty questionable on where D'Angelo Russell's going to fall. I'm not the biggest Julius Randle fan. And so it's absolutely critical for the Lakers to add a big-time prospect in this year's draft to kind of pair with Ingram. And I think they're going to be able to do that after kind of shaking up their front office here over the last week.
Ben Gulliver is our guest, 1320K fan, talking NBA basketball. Looks like Deron Williams is going to land with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Some rumors sounding like maybe Andrew Bogut gets there as well. Do those guys do enough to keep the Cavaliers competitive with the Golden State Warriors? I mean, I know they're not Kevin Durant, but can the Cavs win the finals this year?
You know, definitely there's still a talent gap between Golden State and Cleveland, even if you give the Cavaliers both those guys. But every little bit of help will make LeBron James's life easier. I mean, he's really been carrying a big load this year. You know, J.R. has been out for a time. Kevin Love has missed some time, and LeBron has played huge minutes, really high usage rate. I mean, kind of doing all these things that we thought maybe were in the past for him. I mean, he's well over 30 years old now. He shouldn't probably be taxing himself quite as much as he is during the regular season. You know, it's possible he's trying to chase an MVP award or just get himself back, you know, kind of in the national discussion, because guys like Westbrook and Harden and the Warriors have sort of, you know, carried the major storylines this year. But, having a guy like Deron Williams would definitely help. I mean, extra ball handler, proven. He can play real minutes. You know, it's not kind of like a stick him in for 5 minutes and close your eyes type situation. I mean, he can really be a rotation player for you. But in terms of the matchups with Golden State, you know, I feel pretty strongly about this. I think the only team that can beat the Warriors is themselves. If they can get past their late game issues, if they can get past their complacency when they build big, big leads and kind of give those leads away, if Draymond Green can keep it together in critical moments and not have his little meltdowns, they're going to be the NBA champions. I mean, they should have won the finals last year in 5 games, but they melted down. They won the previous finals pretty convincingly, and they got better this year. And Cleveland's had a lot of turnover, like I said, with their rotation because of injuries. And you look at Golden State's roster, great health. They haven't had to play their star players tons and tons of minutes. And the guys who need to play together, Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, have all logged a decent amount of minutes together where they're going to be comfortable entering the playoffs and feeling cohesive. So you add all of that up, and like I said, you know, Golden State is the only team that really can beat itself this season, I believe, and we'll see if that happens.
Find him on Twitter at Ben Golliver. You can read him at Sports Illustrated. Ben, really great stuff. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, guys. Take care.
Good stuff from Ben Gall over there, getting us a good breakdown on the second half of the season, what the Jazz should expect, and some of the teams that didn't make moves at the trade deadline, as there's still a feeling out period for the Jazz, obviously the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Clippers, still trying to figure out what they have when they get their bodies back, what it looks like when they've got a full team. Clippers haven't been healthy this year. Memphis hasn't been totally healthy this year either. So they're going to try and work these units back together in the second half of the season.
And you've got a talented roster that's been injured this year. And you could say that about the last few Jazz rosters. But, you know, injuries aren't an excuse. They're a product of using your body professionally for athletics. So, yeah, it's a bummer that George Hill and Rodney Hood and Alec Burks and Derek Favors got banged up this year. But that happens all the time. Gordon Hayward broke his finger randomly to start the season.
And how about that? Yeah, you haven't lost Gordon Hayward for long stretches of time yet, so you're kind of lucky.
Gordon Hayward gives you, I mean, he must average 78 games a year for the Jazz. He's been incredibly durable. Injuries aren't an excuse, too. I mean, if you fall short, it's not, oh, we got injured. It's, you didn't do a good enough job. The difference between little league sports and professional sports. These guys are paid to evaluate and grow these teams, and that's why there's a lot of pressure.
Coming up next, we're going to talk some BYU spring football and get you a crazy breakdown on Alabama football revenue. You got to hear these numbers. Stay tuned. It's Gunther and Ben.
On 1320 KFAN.
Gunther and Ben in the afternoon.
Can I ask you a question, Ben? What's the difference?
Football Station.
Gunther and Ben, 1320K fans, 646. He's Kyle Gunther. I'm Ben Anderson. We're hanging out live at the Wasatch Golf Expo. Now, they're going to be shutting things down, coming up here in about 15 minutes. So if you didn't make it out tonight, stop on by tomorrow. Open up at 9 a.m. tomorrow. They're going to be shutting it down at 5 p.m. at the Southtown Expo Center. But it's awesome. Great demonstrations, great products, all the latest when it comes to golf clubs, apparel, the different types of trips. If you're looking at making a big summer excursion, stop on by the Southtown Expo Center. And everyone who stops by gets a ticket at the door. Gets a free round of golf as well, so make sure you stop on by.
They're giving out lessons for kids. They've got clubs for kids. They've got all kinds of top technology, like you mentioned. You know, there's new ways to dress now with golf. It's not just a red shirt anymore. I know for many years, guys just wore the red shirt because everybody was trying to be Tiger Woods. And for seemingly a decade, we've been having the conversation, who's the next Tiger Woods? Who's going to be that big name that everyone's talking about? the name Rory McIlroy used to come up a lot, and then he broke up with Caroline Wozniacki. Then he had the breakdown at the Masters. And then recently, Rory McIlroy just lost all of his fans because he went golfing with the Trumpster. Speaking of Trump, today was the first day.
Find a way to get started with that.
I saw today on the way into work, I saw somebody with a bumper sticker that said Trump on it.
Huh.
Now, I know we are a conservative state. I saw Mitt Romney stickers 7 years into Obama's run that you still see Mitt Romney stickers. Shout out to Mitt. He might be buying part of the Yankees, so he's going to get involved in sports and figure that out. Saw my first Trump bumper sticker today in a state that's 99% Republican. The only Trump sticker, I thought, are we over that thing? I mean, is it now okay to go pro-Trump? I mean, I think I'd rather have seen a GOP sticker at this point here. Not to go political on you, but I am going to mention that. I was pretty surprised by that. And I do love the idea of bumper stickers, too. Just making sure that, you know, because you can't physically roll your window down and vomit your opinions into somebody's ear hole, you got to put your stupid sticker on the back of your car so I'm forced to hear your verbal regurgitation.
If your politics don't come from your bumper sticker, then where do they come from? Where else would you get them? Looking at JaVale McGee. Speaking of transitions, hey, JaVale McGee is in the news. Now, if you don't know who JaVale McGee is, it's because you're a very normal human being. Everybody on Earth knows who Shaq is, and that's what makes this situation so weird. Shaq and JaVale McGee, backup center for the Golden State Warriors, have very serious beef going on online and apparently potentially in person if they were to ever run across one another. Shaq, when he's on TNT, has a segment called Shaqed in a Fool.
It's supposed to be Acting a Fool, but he says Shaqed in a Fool because his name's Shaq.
Whenever an NBA player makes a mistake, has a classic blooper, and everyone remembers growing up watching...
Bloopers were great on Wide World of Sports.
A Wide World of Sports, or even locally, you had Frank Layden. He used to host a couple of specials for NBA bloopers called NBA Bloopers with Marv Albert, and they were funny, and it was a cool little video. But
Marv had bit off a little more than he could chew with that segment.
Shaq has now got 2 points.
Yes!
Shaq.
That was a tasty bite.
Likes to put out these bloopers, but he's really kind of needled and picked on JaVale McGee for good reason.
JaVale makes a lot of mistakes.
JaVale McGee is the type of guy who will dribble the ball the wrong way when he catches it at half court. JaVale McGee is the type of guy who will box out the wrong player.
He'll forget his warm-up pants or something.
Yeah, he'll check into a game without taking his warm-ups off. He's a clown, and he's kind of a fool.
But he's not a malicious guy. He's not out there being outspoken. He's a young player who's clearly not as talented as the Hall of Famer Shaq.
So
JaVale McGee's made $50 million in the NBA.
It must have been last night. They did their Doctor Strange segment. They did an entire Shaq and a Fool dedicated to JaVale McGee issues. And JaVale McGee attacked Shaq on Twitter because of it, saying, "You've been on my back for 5 years now, and what's the deal?" And Shaq's come back and made fun of him. Shaq, admittedly, has a bizarrely... soft ego, has a bizarrely he has a short trigger,
he's got
a short temper,
thin skin
when it comes to other NBA big men. It's never guards, it's never forwards, it's always centers. And we've seen it in the past when he was talking about Dwight Howard. We've seen it with JaVale McGee. He doesn't like the idea that anybody could come up and trump his legacy as the last great big man in the NBA. And with the way things are trending, maybe we never see another Shaq. We never see another guy who plays the way he does.
Don't be
but
rude.
He's still... is so thin-skinned about that type of thing. These two were really going back and forth really hard. I mean, getting racial in it. It was uncomfortable to the point.
Oh, I didn't see the racial stuff.
There was some gross stuff in there from JaVale McGee towards
I saw the threat back from JaVale McGee. I mean, JaVale's not happy.
But they've got to the point where the Golden State Warriors, the team that employs JaVale McGee, contacted Turner Sports to try and have a sit-down to discuss the way Shaq has treated their player, to try and get him to stop, because clearly it's rattling JaVale McGee so bad that he must be bringing it to work with him.
Well, and Steve Kerr came out today and said that JaVale's been a great teammate and kind of had to defend his backup center. Yeah, this is weird. These are grown men. This is not a schoolyard where you have a young kid who's being picked on. JaVale McGee's a grown man with $50 million. And much like when LeBron took offense to what Charles Barkley said, you know, you have the ability to turn that television off. But it shows you how good that show is that even a guy like JaVale McGee, who knows he's going to hate the show, can't turn it off because he loves. I mean, that's as an NBA player, that must be your number one outlet. I would imagine that show is on in the background at every basketball facility across the NBA.
Right.
you know, it's easy to say, JaVale, why can't you just turn the TV off? But, you know, Shaq's a guy that's respected in the league. And Shaq, like you mentioned, is a surefire Hall of Famer, arguably the greatest to ever play his position. It does kind of feel like, hey, leave JaVale McGee alone. Yeah. And now if he bounces the ball off his foot out of bounds on the final possession of a game, bring it up. Make fun of him. Nobody should be above criticism or making making jokes. You know, I hate when some people say, oh, you can't make jokes about that. I mean, you know, as long as somebody can defend themselves, so to speak, I mean, as long as you're not making fun of somebody who's incapacitated, not everybody, men, women, children, all racial groups, everybody, tall people, short people, everybody should be able to get made fun of.
Don't mess with tall people. Let's get a football at 50.
Preposterous.
1320 KFAN brings you football at 50. BYU, Utah, the National Football League. Every hour at 10 till the hour, it's football at 50 on 1320 KFAN.
Football at 50, 1320 KFAN. Alabama, we know this, they make quite a bit of money on the football field. I didn't know how much they made. Last week, KSL had a good article on how much revenue the University of Utah Athletics Department made. And it was about $79 million. And I remember thinking, whoa, that's pretty good money. Alabama's football team, not their athletic program, not excluding
their really
basketball,
rich.
Their women's sports, everything. Their football team makes well north of $100 million.
And they only spend about $56 million, which means
they've got about a $47 million profit.
Just from the football team. Now, a lot of Utah fans had the same reaction. Duh, nobody thought Utah was equal to Alabama. It's no big deal. Well, it is a big deal because then Alabama can use those profits to out-recruit, out-spend, out-impress recruits for some time now, and that gap is going to continue to grow, let alone the gap of guaranteed money from the TV deals for the SEC and the Big Ten Network. You know, Texas football is just not going to be down very long. I mean, they're making $90 to $100 million in profit every year, too. You know, these numbers matter, too. When you realize that Utah football, for example, got to do everything they can to try to get $1 million profit here, well, that $1 million covers just a couple of coaches' salaries. Well, there's tons of assistants that are up for different jobs and titles and upgrades there, and that all factors in financially.
It makes sense why you can pay a guy like Nick Saban $9 million, though, because he makes $40 million for your school. Huge thanks to our producers today back in the studio, JP Chunga. Find him on Twitter at JPKFan.
Yeah.
BYU insider Mitch Harper. Find him on Twitter at Mitch _ Harper on Twitter. And, of course, Ray White, a.k.a. Tyson Whiting. Find him on Twitter at TysonKFan. We're going to be back with you on Monday at 3 o'clock. It's Gunther and Ben.
Yeah. 1320
K-Fan.
Yeah.